You are listening to Stutter Talk. Peter and I are very excited for our show today. Our special guest, Mrs. Annie Glenn, is always active in community service and has had a lifelong interest in programs for children, the elderly, and the handicapped. She is a member of the advisory board for the National Center for Survivors of Childhood Abuse and serves on the advisory board for the National First Ladies Library. Mrs. Glenn serves on the National Deafness and Other Communication Disorders Advisory Council of the National Institutes of Health and is also a member of the advisory panel of the Central Ohio Speech and Hearing Association. In 1987, the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association honored Mrs. Glenn by asking her to present the first annual Annie Glenn Award for achieving distinction despite a communication disorder. Mrs. Glenn is married to Senator and astronaut John Glenn. Together, they serve on the Board of Trustees of Muskingum College. To learn more about the Glens, visit the John and Annie Glenn Historic Site in New Concord, Ohio, and online at www.johnglennhome.org. We hope you enjoy the show as much as we did. Welcome to Stutter Talk, everybody. You're here with Eric Jackson and my good buddy Peter Reitzes.
Hey, Eric.
And our very special guest, we are thrilled to have her on the show today, Mrs. Annie Glenn.
Well, hello, you two stutters.
Hey.
Good morning, Mrs. Glenn. How are you?
Well, this is amazing, I think. And you can call me Annie.
Okay, excellent. Okay.
Did you know I'm an adjunct professor up here?
No.
At Ohio State.
Excellent.
And did you both ever think that you would be in that same way, too, when you were in school?
No.
Absolutely not.
You sound like me. It's nice to be aboard, and to talk to other stutters is very something I never expected to be able to do. So this is a thrill for me. Thank you for inviting me.
It's our pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mrs. Glenn, and I will call you Annie soon, but I have to ease into that. So, Mrs. Glenn, what is your earliest memory of stuttering?
Well, see, John and I grew up in a small college town here in Ohio. It's there were about 1,500 people there, and there's a little college of about 1,200. So I never ventured outside, and then we would go to 15 miles away. My parents would go over there every Saturday. So I never really ventured forth. So I didn't know I was different because I was accepted. I was happy, and we had our groups that always got together for hiking and playing games and joining the town band and things like that. So it you might say it was a small world. Then once in the eighth grade, I mean in the sixth grade, I was asked to recite a poem. And because I never had to recite, I don't remember having problems in reciting in school, but I evidently did because when I got up to recite this poem, I was stuttering, and a boy laughed, and that's hit me, and I'm now 89 years old, so that's been a long time ago that I first knew that I was a stutterer and I was different from other people. So I was never made to recite in junior high or in high school, but I made good grades and with tests and things like that. So I graduated from high school and then went on to college, and I couldn't get a bachelor's degree in teaching because I was a severe, I was an 85% stutterer, which is very, very severe. So I guess when I first knew that I was different than others was when I was in the sixth grade.
It's really funny how we remember those first moments of stuttering. I've talked about this on the show before. For me, I still remember crystal clear when I was 6 years old in first grade, and I tried to hide my stuttering in a class. 6 years old.
When did you have your first help in speaking?
Well, I had therapy my entire life, but it wasn't exactly what you would call good speech therapy.
And did you also grow up in a small town where you were happy and great memories too?
I can remember growing up just really doing everything that I possibly could not to speak. So it was certainly a nice town. I had a great family, but all I really remember is trying so hard not to stutter.
Huh.
Yeah, I share that too.
That's interesting because way back then, in my age, there wasn't any speech therapy. So I didn't even know there was any speech therapy. So I'm glad you two were. it's just exciting to know that there are speech therapists in so many of the schools and the towns and in the cities. And I think it's just an answer to all of everybody's prayers who are stutterers. I think it's wonderful. So I'm glad you two are doing what you're doing because you are opening up and you're sounding great. So just keep it up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. We've read that your father also stuttered. And what was your father's stuttering like?
To tell you the truth, my family was very, very close. I didn't even realize that my dad was a stutterer because I loved him very much. He was the president of the school board. He was he was active in so many things in New Concord that I didn't even realize that he was that his speech was stuttering. When I first realized that is when I was older, and it seems odd, but we never even talked about it then. Now, I think TV and radio has made so many disabilities come out into the open, and people are talking more about it, and they want more information, and so my dad and I were very, very close, and I loved him very much, and our family just was a great family, so that was something special.
It's so amazing what just talking about stuttering can do for a person who stutters.
That's exactly right. I agree with you 100%. And it's interesting to I'll let it come out in another question that I know that you want to ask me.
Married to Senator and astronaut John Glenn, how has being in the public eye affected your stuttering and how you deal with your stuttering?
Well, see, John and I grew up together. I've known him since we were 2 years old, and he also grew up in New Concord, too, and he's always been by my side. And his first flight way back in 62, our two kids, Lynn was, she was in the 8th grade and 9th grade, and Dave, our son, was in the 10th and 11th grade, so they both, like, I wasn't able to answer the phone. I didn't like to talk over the phone, so our kids helped me with that, and the press, well, to tell you the truth, we four didn't expect his first flight to be so in the news like it turned out to be. The press would camp outside of our front door when we were living in Arlington, Virginia at that time, and that's in the Washington, D.C. area where there's a lot of press, as you probably know.
Right. Yeah.
And the first time I was with them, oh, there would be about 20 or 25 outside, and our two kids were by my side. And they soon realized that I wasn't able to answer their questions. So Dave and Lynn did a lot of it. And the press was very, very kind to me. And a lot of them would ask if they could even go up to the grocery to buy my food, and just being very, very kind and wanted to help out and wanted to show that they were in support of us, because it was at a time in our lives where it was very scary. So I was not made to talk long, just because I wasn't able to. Being an 85% stutterer, you aren't able to talk without it's just so noticeable. And I'll always remember when John came back. And he was asked to speak before Congress, and Lynn and Dave and I were supposed to sit up in the gallery, and Lynn has always remembered, before they took us down to our seats, it's where now where the wife of the president sits each time the president speaks before Congress. Well, that day, Dave and Lynn and I were in that seat. And before they took us down to our seats, they had a little reception outside of the door upstairs there. And there were a lot of wives of members of Congress that I recognized their faces, but I couldn't talk very well at all. And Lynn will always remember two of them walked away from me, and and now Lynn is now 62, so she's always remembered that, and that hurt her very, very much. But I think I would be more quiet. I would wait until I could see how the person I was trying to talk to would react. The public eye just really took over our lives. And matter of fact, Dave and Lynn and John and I, when we could feel that, we had our family get together again, because over dinner time was always our family time. And we talked about what it was trying to do to our close family. And John and I just decided to not accept many invitations, and just keep our family close and not have a change. And we're so glad that we did that, because that helped us through many, 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 many years. And it's still, our family is very, very close.
Yeah. How did you get from that point to where you are now? I mean, at what age or at what point did you decide to make changes and to begin intensive speech therapy? Like, what gave you this optimism and motivation to change?
Okay, well, see, at Muskingum College, there the little college that's in the town where John and I grew up. Back then, there were no speech therapists. I would have had to have driven, say, 75 miles away to Columbus. That would be the closest great big city. And so I wasn't able to have any speech help at all. When I graduated, I majored in music, and one of my college minors was to be a secretary, and my professor knew that if I would have to have an interview, that I would have a real problem. But she knew that I was very, very good in shorthand. I was the fastest in the class. I was the fastest typer. And she knew I could be a very, very good secretary. So she asked me if I would mind her writing a resume for me, and because she knew that I could get a job. So I took that. I wanted to go to Dayton, which is where the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is, and that was at the beginning of World War II. So I went down to catch a bus, and I had to hand to the bus driver my destination because I couldn't tell him, and he thought I was deaf. So he wrote a note to me how much it would be. And so I paid him, and I got on the bus, and off I went to Dayton, which was, it would be close to 80 or 85 miles away. And I found a place to room. In Dayton, there was an office, an Army office there in the downtown part of Dayton, and I went down in there to hand in my resume, and the colonel took it and he read it and he hired me as his secretary. So it was about 4 months later, 3 months later, he wanted me to take down one of his phone calls. He was busy, and he wanted me to do it. So I took the phone, and the man began telling me everything, and I was writing it all down in shorthand. Then he asked me to read it back, and I couldn't do it. So my boss, the dear colonel, he said he would never make me do that again. So I'll always remember, I would love to see that man now. I don't have no idea where he is, but he was right by my side. So I know you two have had people right by your sides during tough times too. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, was it at that point, Annie, that you decided to go into therapy, or was it after that?
It was after that. When John got his, we were engaged, and he had gone into the service right away after the World War started, and we couldn't get married yet until he had his wings. So the minute he had his wings, we were married 1 week later, and then he was in the Marine Corps, and he went overseas, and I worked as a secretary in one of the offices there at the college. But I didn't And then we began, when he came back, we had, then Dave was born, and then I never thought about speech therapy until, I think it when John was in Korea. And one of the professors up at Muskingum told me about this Dr. Frank Robinson down at Miami University here in Ohio. And so I wasn't able to call, but this person at Muskingum called Dr. Robinson, and Frank said for me to come over, and I could stay with him and his wife for a week, and my parents kept they took care of our two kids, and I drove over to Miami University, and I did that for while John was in Korea, and then I would drive back to the Concord, and then I would drive back to Miami. But so that was my very first. It as I look back on it, I think it educated me more then about what stuttering really is, and I tried to do what he told me to do and all that, but it was my fault that I really didn't put into practice what he wanted me to do, but I still wanted to try. So that was my very, very, very first time.
Yeah, and I've read that in 1973 you did intensive therapy at the Hollins Communication Research Center in Virginia. How did you get there? Like, what made you or motivated you to do that?
That's a real story.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yes.
John, he knew that I wanted to have speech therapy, and he would always inquire for me. So one morning, he and I were listening to the Today Show. Say, by the way, you two, you're making me practice on what I'm supposed to be doing, and I think this is great.
Oh, well, we're certainly glad that we can help out in that way. Absolutely.
But we were listening to the Today Show, and they were interviewing this man called Dr. Ron Webster, and he was a psychology professor at Hollins College. See, there's that word H, which I can now say in Hollins, and that's that silent sound too. But anyway,
I have to say it's so great how you're able to stop in the middle of what you're saying and kind of reflect upon the trouble that you know you're having or you used to have on that sound. I think it's so great.
Well, thank you. Even now, sometimes if I'm really, really tired and I have to answer the phone, you have to say hello. Sometimes I will say hello.
Right.
Okay, so Ron was being, I mean, it was the most interesting interview about why he stuttered and why he was very interested in it, and he wanted to start an institute on stuttering. And then there was a long article about him in Time magazine way back then. And John and I kept getting phone calls from different friends of ours across the country whom we had met in the Marine Corps and all. And they had heard it, too, and they wondered if we had heard this. They thought, wow, this sounds like something different. So John asked me, well, would you like to do it? And I said, honey, I would love to try. See, I wasn't able to call down there, but he did. And I was the first 100 to be enrolled, and I was there for 3 weeks. Back then it was a very intensive, tough, interesting course There were only six of us, and we weren't even we weren't allowed to call home. We had to tell you the truth. I learned how to speak all over again. I learned how to say every word of the alphabet all over again. I learned how deep breaths and relaxing the throat and the K sounds, the F sounds, the S sounds, the T sound. You said it over and over. The first week we had to carry a stopwatch and speak at 2 seconds per syllable correctly, and then the second week you moved it up for 1 second per syllable, and then you began putting the syllables together in words. And the third week they took us out to shopping centers, and we were supposed to see, before I could even talk, when I was a severe stutterer, when I would go shopping and I would go into a store and hunt and hunt and hunt for what I wanted because I couldn't ask for it. Then I would leave the store, then I would go back and hunt again till I found what I wanted. And when we, when John and I would go eating out, John would be the one to order my food because he was always right by my side and so encouraging and loving me. And he was... He just wanted to just to be. Oh, how do I explain a man who really loves me? Been married 66 years, so we get along pretty well together. But anyway, at Holland's, in that third week, we were to make phone calls too, which was like. I called John first, and he started crying. He was so excited, and then I called some of my other friends, and they just couldn't believe. And matter of fact, some friends after I could talk, they just said that was just part of me, and that they loved me anyway. So you just go through different feelings. Of being able to talk, and I wasn't able to finish the third week because I had a scare of a breast cancer. No, a breast, something was wrong, so I went home to see about that. Then about 2 years later, I went back again and took the whole course over again. And by that time, they had put in the full breath, and they had and the fluency part. I mean, there were so many things that they had added to their therapy. So I went through it a second time. So it's just like I've told more people. It's like an answer to a prayer, and it was answered.
So it sounds like that experience at Holland's was really a life-changing experience for you. Was that process of change, did it last those 3 or 6 weeks you were down there, or did it take you several years after that to change, or are you still changing with regards to your stuttering?
Okay, after I went home, the people there at Holland's had told me about a speech pathologist at Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., Patrice Thompson. And so I would drive over there one day a week and work with her, because she had been trained by Holland's too, so she worked with me for at least 2 years while we were still living there, and then when we would come back, then I could call in to her, and then she still. One thing I did was to put a tape recorder next to my telephone at home, and I would tape my conversation, not the person who was calling in. I would tape my conversation, and then after I was through, I could play it over again, and I could hear errors that I was making. So I would begin practicing, and that really, I did that for at least 2 years or maybe 3 years. Then I decided that I was getting more doing what I was supposed to be doing, but I had a long ways to go, so I just kept doing and trying to, you know, as you two would know, out in the world, people really talk so fast, okay. And it's easy for us stutterers to want to talk fast too, and then that's when you get into trouble. So I had to stop and think, take a full breath, start again, and do what I'm supposed to do, because the normal speaking people. And also, Pat told me to listen to well-known people on TV who are interviewing regular people, and they have problems sometimes with their speech, but they don't care. So Pat instilled in my mind that normal speaking people even have problems too, that I was okay. He said, just keep at it.
I know that the Hollins Institute has a very specific protocol of essentially retraining a person how to talk. Would you also say, Annie, that a big part of your change was accepting yourself as a person who stutters?
Oh, yes, sir. I will always be a stutterer. And I guess I have never gone back to... If I get very, very tired, then I will find that I just have to put into practice, like that PR practice, and stop and pause, and just... There are a lot of things that you can remember that you're supposed to be doing, and because it's just not all, it's not always automatic. When I'm giving speeches now, I can remember my first experience on a microphone, and I was asked to go to Cincinnati for the National Speech and Hearing Association convention, and there were 2,000 people there, and Pat went with me. And that was my first experience with a microphone and before a crowd. And I had practiced with Pat, and I knew how to do it, and I thought I could handle it. But you never know. So after it was over, and I got a standing ovation, and I walked out in the hall, and I just sobbed. I was so excited. I thought, by golly, I did it. I did what I was supposed to do, and they had it on tape, and it was just wonderful, just wonderful.
You're realizing that we can actually go up and speak in front of a group, and everything is going to be okay, is such an amazing feeling, isn't it?
Have you done that many times?
I bet. I certainly have. I actually teach a public speaking course at my college.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, congratulations.
Well, thanks very much. And Peter's a professor of a couple of stuttering classes.
I get asked here on campus at Ohio State University to go over to the speech and hearing school and teach a class of ones getting either their master's or their doctoral degrees. And boy, that's, I know your feeling. It's just wonderful. It's just wonderful to talk about it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm an adjunct professor. But now, I tell everybody, I love being called an adjunct professor, but I don't get paid.
Yeah, well, and I don't, I'm sorry, please.
No, but I don't care because I can do it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, well, we get paid, but not very much. So it's really for the love of what we're doing that,
great.
Eric comes into my graduate class a couple times a year and helps me teach them about stuttering. And for graduate students to hear Eric and me talk about stuttering, I think is very important. So it's a lot of fun. And if you're ever in New York, we'll have to get you to speak.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to make the point that I really appreciate it that you guys are actually talking about stuff like this, because this is the kind of stuff that really, as stutterers, we think about all the time, and it's really hard to be honest about it, some of these topics, because they can be sensitive. And I think it's really cool that you're willing to tackle them.
Hi folks, I'm Mel Tillis. Nobody knows better than I do how stuttering affects your life, but help is close at hand. If you, your child, or someone you know has a stuttering problem, reach for the phone and call the Stuttering Foundation of America for information. The toll-free number is 1-800-992-9392. 1-800-992-9392.
Hi, this is Tammy from the National Stuttering Association. The NSA is a nonprofit self-help group for adults, teens, and children who stutter and their families. We offer an extensive network of local self-help chapters, an annual conference, CEUs for speech pathologists, and a host of brochures and books on stuttering. Our annual conference, which takes place at the end of June, is exciting, informative, and fun. It brings together hundreds of people who stutter, their families, and speech pathologists. We have terrific speakers and workshops. You'll make hundreds of new friends and learn a lot about stuttering. Don't miss it. You can find more information on our website or call the national office. To find a local support chapter near you or to learn more about the National Stuttering Association, visit us at www.westutter.org or call 800-937-8888. Thanks so much.
This is Ro Ostergaard. I am affiliated with FRIENDS, the National Association of Young People Who Stutter. We are having our 12th annual convention this year in Tampa, Florida, at the Embassy Suites near Busch Gardens, Thursday, July 23rd through the 25th. This is a place where families and children will have an amazing experience meeting other kids who stutter, and parents meeting other parents who have children who stutter. If you have any questions about our upcoming convention or would like to talk to a parent or a young adult who stutters, feel free to go to our website at www.friendswhostutter.org, and we'll be happy to be in contact with you as soon as possible.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Joe Klein from the College of St. Rose, and you're listening to Stutter Talk.
Hi, this is Samantha Gianuso, and you're listening to Stutter Talk.
Hi, this is Michael Sugarman, co-founder of the National Stuttering Association. I want you to tune in and listen to these guys. They're pioneers in the field, and we're just getting the word out. So thank you guys, and keep on talking.
Hey, this is John Melendez from The Tonight Show, and you're listening to Stutter Talk. Really good show, but, you know, it takes a long time to get to the point.
Hi, this is Russ Hicks, and believe me, if you stutter, you're not alone.
I want to share with you a friend of mine who I've known for a long time. Her name is Janet Givens, and she shared an experience online that about you that I want you to hear. She was saying that in 1962, she was in the sixth grade, and she remembers seeing you on TV and how important it was for her to hear you stutter. She basically said that hearing you stutter on TV changed her life.
Oh, and my gosh.
I wanted to share that with you.
Oh, my gosh. I might begin crying. No, I haven't. Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, here's her exact quote. It was one of those major moments in one's life that you can just never forget. I heard her stutter and thought I would just burst. And she said she didn't know anyone else who stuttered until she heard you do it on TV. So I wanted to share that.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Isn't that wonderful? What is she? I wonder what she's doing now.
Well, I'll have to Facebook her because she's actually married to my former speech therapist. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the stuttering world. Actually, I think you met her in 1994. You spoke at the National Stuttering Project, and I think Janet was the one who was fielding you questions from the audience. It's a small world, but we have so many more questions that we want to ask you. I wanted to share another story with you. I heard secondhand through a friend of mine that you were giving the annual Annie Glenn Award one year at the American Speech Language Hearing Association. And that your husband spoke as well, and he told the audience that of all the things he had achieved in life as a senator and as an astronaut, his greatest moment was that first time the phone rang and he picked it up, and it was you calling him for the first time. Do you remember that? And do you remember what motivated you to finally do that?
See, I was at Holland. And that, and we were to make phone calls, and John was my because I wasn't supposed to call home those 3 weeks, and he was my first phone call, and he cried, and I'll always remember that. He was so tickled and so proud, and he just couldn't believe that I could talk and practice with him over the phone. So he's always watched over my schedules that I don't get too tired. I do remember that, and he's always encouraging me and always watching over me. So I'm a very lucky woman, and I know that, and I'm spoiled.
Yeah, I think it's so important to have caring people around you when you're going through that, or when you're going through that process of change, because thinking about stuttering in a positive way as opposed to what we spent our lives doing for so long is such a hard thing. And family members or friends or speech therapists that are supportive are such a huge help.
That's right. Well, when John, at different places where we would be living when he was in the Marine Corps, and he would have to go away for a few days on duty, he would have to tell a neighbor or a friend if I needed some help if one of our kids would become ill, or if an emergency came up, that they would have to be the one to call in. So he was always watching over me. So I know your feeling.
Stopped a while this morning on my way back home. I had to realize it's time that I'd be all alone, 'cause she is moving somewhere far away, not slow.
Do you have time for a few more questions?
Sure, but do you have... I'm talking too long. enjoying this.
We love it. We could talk to you all day, Annie.
Absolutely.
Well, I could do it too.
So, Eric, can I ask the next question? Is that okay?
Go right ahead, sir. You're too polite.
Okay. In 1999, you became the celebrity spokesperson for the Stuttering Foundation of America's annual poster campaign. What was that like, and what did that mean to you?
The one part of being in politics that I really, Scout Honor, loved was to meet so many walks of life people. And I really enjoyed that. And sometimes I would run into a stutterer, and I would be careful about opening up the conversation. But they, and quite often, so many of them would come up to me and want to know more about my life, and about wanting to ask me questions. And it's just wonderful. I mean, you two are touching more lives than you really realize, and I know wherever you go, there are going to be people coming up to you like they do me, and mothers and dads want to know more about it, and it's just if I can help, if I can encourage and help people, a person, whomever it is, from any walk of life, but it's just something I never expected to be able to do, and it's just a great, great feeling. It just gives me pride.
Yeah, it's great to hear you say that, because Eric and I talk about on the show all the time how there was a time we couldn't think of helping ourselves, let alone other people. And, you know, it's this whole great support thing where when you finally can make changes, you can then share that with the rest of the world.
A support thing, that's exactly it. That's a good word for it. Good for you.
Okay. Yeah, and it's really not, you know, the motivation doesn't really come from making money or increasing our status as a professional. Where the motivation comes from to spend all of these hours on this is, you know, just that feeling that maybe some other people who stutter will find that feeling of empowerment, you know, and will learn to think about their stuttering in a different way.
That's exactly my feeling too. Good, I'm so proud of you too. And just please go along. You know, I think TV had changed disabilities so much. I mean, it became more open, but also the computer. My goodness. It's really changing now, and it's changing lives. I'm beginning to wonder what in the world is next, and I can hardly wait to know, because it's just amazing that what we're all living at this time of our lives, isn't that right?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. After attending speech therapy down at Hollins, I'm just going to jump back to that for a second. you describe feeling like a butterfly that had been let out of a cocoon.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Why was that feeling so liberating for you?
When you can't talk, because I had so many times of people laughing at me or just turning away and walking away or being not very nice to me, and that hurts, and that just makes you become very, very quiet. And when John and I would, when he would be transferred to another station, and I would I would take my time getting to meet. To get involved until, because I would always watch the reactions of people that I was meeting for the first time, and not being able. It's those horrible, those awful experiences that cut into your heart and feelings and mind. I was quiet, and I would take my time in making friends, and then I would make really honest to goodness wonderful friends. And but you watch people, and you watch their reactions, and but I think I really wonder if TV has brought more of us what we have gone through and the experiences that we all have done. Don't you think that has is beginning to educate more people, or am I wrong on that? Like when I'm out in a crowd and I see a person in a wheelchair, I immediately want to get closer, and then quite often they will recognize me, and then I will begin talking with them. I think there's more like a James Earl Jones. We've gotten to know him, and he was the first one who did win the Annie, and he's a stutterer. But listen to him, boy. He's amazing, and more people have commented on that. James Earl Jones is a stutterer. Well, James Earl sure is, because I know him.
Right.
So, but for people like that, James Earl has really, because he had a terrible time when he was young. So. That's great to be able. So you two are doing it too. So just all I can say is, just I'm glad you. How did you know about me anyway? How did you? This is wonderful that you even contacted me.
Oh please, a lot of people know about you. I've been reading about you. Let's be very honest. You are not only a person who stutters, but you are a woman who stutters, and we don't have a lot of women role models who stutter, and you're at the top of the list. So,
oh, yeah. Oh, thank you, sir.
No. Thank you. I mean, I want to let you know that before calling you, I called my former speech therapist, Phil Schneider, and told him that I was speaking with you today. And his first response was, "Oh my God, she is such a role model for people who stutter."
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you are revered in the stuttering world. So, I wanted to mention what you said about the TV. I think it's a double-edged sword. I think you're right. Stuttering is much more in the public eye. I think one of the problems with it, though, is that so few people will actually stutter on TV. Like, we just had John Stossel on the show, and he talks about stuttering, but then he edits his stuttering out of all of his broadcasts. So,
I agree with you.
Yeah, so we're seeing stutterers, but we're not seeing them stutter.
I agree with you on that. Is it? I wonder why that is. Is it that you're afraid what it'll do to yourself, or what is it? I think John Stossel went to Holland.
Yes,
but but he doesn't come back to the reunions at all. I've never met him, and someday I would really like to meet him and ask him why he doesn't come back, because he is open and he does talk about it.
Yeah.
But I want him to. I would like to know too. Does he? I know that you two are noticing the way I'm talking, and I'm not completely pure, but I'm 100% better than what I used to be. But I would love to hear him talk too and see how he does stutter.
Yeah, I think an important point just to add is that when you say you're 100% better with your stuttering, it sounds like that when you talk. You know, you have a certain confidence when you talk. And of course, there are still moments of stuttering going on there. But to me, just to have the confidence to talk and to be able to work through when stuttering does happen, that's success when it comes to speaking, I think.
Yeah. I think you're right. That's very, very true. And I've always remembered what Pat Thompson had told me, that normal speaking people, they had problems with their speech every now and then, and nobody cares. So I think you're exactly right. I think that's exactly right. So we just have to keep going, don't we?
Absolutely. I just keep thinking that it would be so great if every once in a while a celebrity who stutters just kind of let a little bit of stuttering out, you know, just to kind of show people, especially children, that even in a position like that, when you're famous, when you're a celebrity, stuttering is okay and stuttering is normal.
So you were portrayed in the 1983 film The Right Stuff, and there was a lot of portrayal of your stuttering in that film. Do you think they got it? Did they accurately portray your stuttering experience?
I want to tell you that none of the seven wives or astronauts we never even met who was going to play us. John's never even met Ed Harris.
Oh man!
To this day. And I would get mail wondering if I was mentally retarded and things like that. So I'm sorry that the people everybody loves that movie, and it's been shown over and over and over and over again. But the way they projected all of us, I think, was not the way. The Right Stuff book is so correct and so good, and also the movie Apollo 13 is just so true, because Jim Lovell, the astronaut in Apollo 13, came to John to tell him that they were going to make the movie on Apollo 13. And John said, "Okay, Jim, get to know the person who's going to be playing you. Get involved in as much as you can about the a story, And John just gave him a lot of information on what to do and what not to do, because Jim and Marilyn were our neighbors down in by the Johnson Space Center, so we know them very well. And that movie, Apollo 13, is real. But now, how did I get on that subject?
Well, you know what it is that I rewatched The Right Stuff recently to prepare for our conversation, and I kind of got annoyed because they suggested that you were a little bit aloof or snobby in the movie. And, you know, when I saw that, I thought, no, that's just, you know, not wanting to stutter, you know, like, yeah. That's what I mean, do you agree with that? Or
I agree 100%. I only saw that movie once, and our kids and John and I went to it, and we thought, that movie is just not right. And I don't care if I ever see it again, because I just didn't like it either.
Well,
thank you for saying that.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, it kind of made me really angry, actually. So. Yeah.
Rather ironic.
We'll refer to it now as The Wrong Stuff.
Right.
No, I love it. Well, the book is very well, the book is very good. But the matter of fact, they sent a script to the Seven, and they didn't like the script at all. But we, none of us got to meet the actors or the actresses. Matter of fact, Johnson, as I said, Johnson never even met has even met Ed Harris yet. So I don't care if I ever see that movie.
Yeah,
it's The Wrong Stuff too. I'm on your side.
that's great.
I'm certainly glad that we got that out of the way then. Annie, what advice would you give as a person who has dealt with stuttering her whole life? What advice would you give to other people who are maybe struggling a little bit with stuttering?
Okay, when they walk up to me, and I can tell that they really want to talk to me and to ask me questions. I never give them where I never say go to Holland College in Roanoke. I never have told anybody that. I always say, inquire in your where you live in your neighborhood, and to find out where your closest speech therapist might be, and then if they want more information about where I went, then I will give it to them. But there are a lot, like in New York, Kitty Stockel, she was at Holland's, and she's been in New York. I forget where she was before she retired, but she went from Holland's up to the city of New York and opened up a place up there, but there are good places all over our country. But if they want more information on Roanoke at Holland's, then I have given out the telephone number to people and things like that. But I think it's up to a stutterer to find a place where they have confidence and they get some results that they can really continue practicing on. And so I think that's my only answer on that.
Would you say that simply going out there and trying to find or trying to meet other people who stutter would be a good way to go about it as well?
Yes, if the stutterer will talk to them.
Right.
So many of us we try to hide it too. So that might be it. I'm not sure. I've never thought about that. That's a big. That's Very interesting. Matter of fact, there are a lot of different support groups in towns and cities. Maybe that's where they could start. Would you think about that too?
Big
time.
Would that
be good?
Yeah. No, we very much believe in support. I mean, we also believe in speech therapy as well, but we're very active in the stuttering self-help groups. And we've had on Ronald Webster from Hollins, and we've also had on a lot of people from support groups too. So I guess we come at it that there's just so many ways to deal with stuttering that we just try to use them all.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because that's very important. Support groups are very caring people, and I think that would be a perfect place to inquire.
Yeah. Did you have time for just one or two more
sure. mm-hmm.
questions? Or
I'm enjoying this. Sure.
Oh, we are loving it. Eric, can I go, or do you want to go?
Well, you can go only if you stop asking for my permission.
Okay.
I can see you two enjoy each other, don't you? That's great.
Oh, we could talk about stuttering all day long. You spoke to over 400 people who stutter in 1994 at the National Stuttering Projects Conference. What did that mean to you? What did it feel like to be in a room with so many people who stutter?
That was amazing. I didn't know what to expect, what my feelings would be, because there were different types, there were different amounts of stuttering, and I really enjoyed it. I had the best time, and have you ever walked into a room of 400 stutterers?
Oh, yeah. This is amazing.
Only a couple of times, and when I have done that, it's just been one of the most incredible feelings of my life.
That's right. That's exactly how I felt, because I came out of that and went home, and I told John all about it, and he just got the biggest kick out. He said, "That's wonderful. That would be perfect." He was so tickled. I did it.
So we've been asking you a lot of stuttering questions. Is there anything that we've missed? Is there anything that you wanted to bring up that we haven't gotten to yet?
Whew. I think our conversation, we three, I've really enjoyed it. And I think, as you said, I mean, I could go on and on and on, and just I could ask you all a lot of questions too. And I like our visit. I'm calling it a visit. If it's all right with you, it's not an interview. It's just a visit. It's just been wonderful. And if I can, encourage the parents and the stutterers and or normal speaking people to understand more about what we've all been going through. That means so much to me. And thank you for asking me to be on your podcast. Is that what it's called?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay.
Well, can I take us out? I wanted to read you two sentences that somebody wrote about you as a good way to end the show, if that's all right.
Okay.
A very beloved person who stutters, his name is Marty Geiser. He wrote an essay titled My Hero, Annie Glenn, and here's how he ended it. John Glenn is a pioneer in space. Annie Glenn is a pioneer to all of us who have struggled to overcome the shame of a disability. I admire John for his skill, determination, and bravery in space. I admire Annie even more because she has transformed herself into a role model who refuses to stay silent or be hidden. So
wow.
thank Thank you.
Well, that's really special. Thank you very much. Can I get? Wait a minute. That really hit me. Oh, thank you so much. Oh, you too. I've got a feeling someday we are going to meet.
Oh, we sure hope so. That would be a pleasure.
Well, Kathy just walked in the door, so I really have enjoyed this. And you two keep at it.
Thank you so much. And we hope to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.